Secretary Chris Wright standing right next to in his interview on Fox News, Lee Zeldin. Let's start with David Doniger responding to this as he talks about pushing back against the Orwellian squelching of science.
Well, it's truly an upside-down world when you listen to Chris Wright. He called upon and actually hired a special government employees, five people picked because they are climate skeptics and deniers of major elements of the science. These are people who have been advancing fringe views for a long time, and the science community does exactly what Chris Wright wants. It reviews anybody's assertions against evidence, and these views have been consistently found to be fringe and unreliable and contrary to the evidence. I have not seen anything like this since Tuesday, where scientists are coming out of the woodwork to point out the flaws in this work by the five fringe scientists. There is a comment period. I'm sure that hundreds of scientists are going to point out the flaws in this work. And for Chris Wright to represent this as an open, neutral process is nonsense. He handpicked five people who've been on the fringe for 20 or 30 years to tell him what he wants to hear, which is that fossil fuels are the cat's meow.
Finally, Michael Mann, your final thoughts as we go back to the inauguration when President Trump vowed to declare a national energy emergency in order to fulfill his campaign pledge to drill, baby, drill.
Yeah, it's again, you know, the irony, and David laid it out there. This is what we call projection, right? The very things that they are accusing scientists and others of are the things that they are doing. What's Orwellian here is them claiming they're doing this, you know, for the good of our economy, when, of course, these extreme weather events that have been amplified by climate change are devastating our economy, are devastating agriculture. These wildfires and floods represent a near and present danger to us. And the cost of inaction, of not preventing further damage, it far outpaces any reasonable estimate of the cost of taking action, of the investment in clean energy that can help create a thriving economy and protect us from the ravages of ongoing climate change.
I want to thank you both for being with us. Of course, we'll continue to follow this story. Michael Mann, acclaimed climate scientist, professor, University of Pennsylvania, and David Doniger, senior attorney at NRDC's Climate and Energy Program. That's the Natural Resources Defense Council. Next up, a group of activists from Louisiana have come here to New York to confront the financial backers of natural gas projects in what's known as Cancer Alley. We'll speak with the Vessel Project's Roshetta Ozan and her 12-year-old daughter, Camilla, who suffers from asthma like so many in Cancer Alley. Stay with us.
Monsanto, ruler of the earth, the air and water too. Have you ever figured what you're gonna do when you find you've poisoned even you? Monsanto, have you no children to live beyond your time and live to feel the shame of your every crime? The GMO potato that McDonald's buys, and now it ain't even safe to eat a mess of fries. Monsanto.
Bad Monsanto by the late folk musician Michael Hurley in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. A group of activists from Louisiana have traveled to New York this week to confront the financial backers of destructive natural gas projects in what's known as Cancer Alley. The protests come just days after the U.S. liquefied natural gas company Venture Global announced it's going ahead with plans to build a massive new liquefied natural gas facility in Louisiana after the company secured $15 billion in financing. During a series of actions here in New York, protesters have been targeting big banks, including Barclays, Bank of America, as well as the homes of executives. On Thursday, protesters visited the home of Frances Townsend, who served as Homeland Security Advisor for President George W. Bush, now a board member of the insurance company Chubb. This is Roshetta Ozan of the Vessel Project speaking outside Townsend's home.
We came to the door of the murderers.
That was Roshetta Ozan, founder and director of the environmental justice group, the Vessel Project in Louisiana. She's joining us here in our Democracy Now! Studio with her 12-year-old daughter, the climate activist Camilla Ozan. She suffers from asthma like so many in Cancer Alley. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! I also covered you months ago when you came and were involved in a lot of these protests. A number of people got arrested. First of all, Roshetta, start off by telling us, what is Cancer Alley? Where does it extend from in Louisiana, and why do you call it that?
Yes, thank you so much for having us, Amy. So Cancer Alley is traditionally known as the 85-mile stretch between New Orleans and Baton Rouge. Well, we live in Sulphur, Louisiana. In
Sulphur?
Yes, Sulphur. It smells just like the name. Sulphur is in southwest Louisiana near Lake Charles. But what we've grown to know is that the entire state of Louisiana is Cancer Alley. So we live where what's called the mouth of Cancer Alley, where we have dozens and dozens of petrochemical, LNG, oil and gas polluting facilities.
And so if you can talk about what is this toxic billionaires tour that you've traveled all the way from Louisiana to New York for this week.
We've come here because we've asked, we've requested, we've emailed for the CEOs of banks like Citibank, JP Morgan Chase, insurance companies like Chubb and AIG. We've asked them to come to our communities, breathe the air, drink the water, and get a taste of what we live every day. And they've refused to come. Yet they sit here in New York and in offices in DC, and they make decisions for our communities. Decisions that are killing our children, decisions that are harming our air, our water, and our wildlife. So we brought our community here to them.
So why today Citibank?
Today we're going to be in front of Citibank because Citibank continues to be the number two leader in financing fossil fuels. Even though they proclaim that they're doing better, they're making better choices, they're adhering to free prior and informed consent, we know that numbers don't lie. Citibank has put billions of dollars behind fossil fuel projects since the Paris Agreement.
We're also joined by Camilla Ozan. She is 12 years old, but it's not the first time she's taken part in a climate protest. I want to go back to last year when we filmed her here in New York during another protest outside Citibank.
The Citibanks keep funding these fossil fuel industries in our communities. They put them in the small Black and Indigenous communities on purpose because they know that we can't do anything about that. They put them in poor communities, in low-income communities on purpose. This is not okay. This is racist.
This is not okay. This is racist, Camille. Camille is joining us in our studio, and I want to be the first to wish you a happy pre-birthday, because tomorrow you will be 13.
Yes, sir.
But talk about the conditions that you suffer from, and describe sulfur for us. Your mom said, basically, you're saying your community smells.
Yes. Yeah, so when you walk outside, right, as soon as you walk outside of my house, if you look over, you can see the industries from right outside of in my front yard. And from the industries, you can see like the bulging fires, and you can smell this really toxic air. And it's not, that's not good air to be breathing in. And it's not good for the kids to go outside and play outside, because the air is making them sick with conditions like cancer, asthma, eczema. My brother even has epilepsy from these plants and these industries harming him and his health, because they want to put them in communities like mine, in communities where people, like, they can't control what the banks are funding and putting in our communities.
So you suffer from eczema and asthma?
Yes, ma'am.
What happens with your asthma?
With my asthma, it makes me feel like it's hard to breathe, and I feel like an elephant sitting on my chest. And I'm thankful that my grandma, like, helps me have natural remedies to help me get through this process of asthma.
Rashetta, you look like you're crying.
I am. Because it's so sad that I had to bring all of my children here to New York to go in front of these CEOs and go in front of these banks to plead our case that our children are dying. My 7-year-old son is also here. He'll be speaking today. He goes outside to jump on the trampoline, to play on the swing set, and he comes back in the house and he says, "Mom, it stinks out here. It smells like rotten eggs. I don't want to be outside." You know, in 2025, where children are so prone to devices and sitting in front of iPads, which I'm not condemning, but to have children who still want to go outside and play, but they can't because the air is horrible. And to be paying a water bill in a community where every day we're getting alert that says, don't drink the water. There's a boil water advisory. There's E. coli in the water every single day. And also Louisiana just announced 4 deaths from bacteria in the water. Something has to be done. And it just makes me sad. This is not a happy occasion to be here in New York, where otherwise it should be. We're here because we're fighting for our lives.
You're holding 2 protests today?
We're holding 2 protests today. We're going from Citibank, which is the second largest funder of fossil fuels, and we're heading to Jane Fraser, who is the CEO of Citibank. We're heading to her house next because she has refused to meet with us in person. So we're going to her doorstep.
And what are you going to ask her for? What are you demanding? And I want to ask both of you that, starting with Camille.
We are demanding that she stops funding these plants and putting them in industries like ours, because she would never put them in her community. She only puts them in our low-income communities.
What we're asking for is that they listen to us. They understand that we are real people. We are not small people from small towns that are sacrifice zones. We are people with culture, with family, who are fighting for our right to breathe clean air and drink clean water. And we want them to change their investments, invest in renewable energy, invest in the community, invest in small businesses, invest in our schools, in green spaces, in resources that our communities need to survive and thrive.
I want to thank you both for being with us, Rashetta and Camille Ozan. Rashetta is the founder and director of the environmental justice group, The Vessel Project, and Camille, a climate activist, turns 13 years old tomorrow. Again, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Next up, we go to Texas, where Republican state lawmakers are moving to redraw the congressional districts at President Trump's urging, with the goal of picking up 5 more Republican congressional seats. Ari Berman asks, Trump's Texas gerrymander is supercharging a new war on democracy. That's the title of his new piece in Mother Jones. Stay with us.
Señor presidente, le vengo a avisar, no tengo papeles para trabajar. Presidente, pregunto por qué matan al moreno con piel de café. Si fuera presidente, honestamente, si fuera presidente, para mi gente, si fuera presidente, honestamente, presidente, para mi gente. Ah.
If I was president, Las Capeteras, here in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We end today's show in Texas, where a major political fight's playing out that could shape whether Democrats retake the House in the midterms and beyond. After the 2020 election, President Trump famously called the Georgia Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, and told him to find 11,780 votes. Now Trump has called on Texas Republicans to find five congressional seats ahead of next year's midterms.
Are you calling in for a complete redrawing of the congressional map ahead of next year?
No, just a very simple redrawing. We pick up five seats.
But we have
a couple of other states where we'll pick up seats also.
This week, Republicans delivered upon Trump's request and released their proposal for a newly drawn Texas congressional map that would add five Republican seats. It's being pushed forward quickly with a hearing set for today in Austin. Its newly drawn district set up a likely clash between incumbent Democrats, including in the Austin area, where longtime Congressmember Lloyd Doggett, who served for three decades, would be pitted against the rising newcomer Greg Kassar, chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. This is Kassar.
It's the same old BS. Corrupt politicians having a scheme to rig the rules of our elections so that they can drown out voters' voices and remain unaccountable. We're not going to have it. Not on our watch.
Kassar, Doggett, Al Green, and other lawmakers joined House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries of New York at a Thursday news conference in Austin. Jeffries did not directly respond when asked if he'd support a move by Texas Democrats to walk out to stop the redistricting proceedings and face a $500 a day for each a fine for each member.
It's an all-hands-on-deck moment. And all options should be on the table to protect the people of Texas. But Texas Democrats are going to be the ones to decide that. We will fight them politically. We will fight them governmentally. We will fight them in court.
After Texas Republicans unveiled a new congressional map favoring the Republicans, Democratic Congressmember Jasmine Crockett of the Dallas area revealed she would no longer live in her own district.
I currently don't live in the CD30 that they created. I don't. That's not where I live. Now, they asked us where we live because they are supposed to take that into consideration. And these are some of the things that the court will look at when they're trying to determine whether or not there were problems with creating the maps as incumbents and where they live. And they moved me out of my district. Yeah, they completely changed the makeup of Texas 30. It's really awful. So we'll have to have some conversations about what that looks like. Just so you know, the rules when you are running for Congress on the federal level is that you don't have to live in the district to run for the seat. But the question will be, what do my constituents say? What do they want?
For more, we're joined by Ari Berman, voting rights correspondent for Mother Jones Magazine, where his latest piece is headlined, Trump's Texas Gerrymander is Supercharging a New War on Democracy. Ari, how did Texas get to this point? And we may see, after this broadcast, the Democrats walking out of the state legislature.
Well, it really came from Donald Trump, Amy. And what's happening in Texas is Trump's most tangible plan to rig the 2026 midterms. It's not his only plan to try to manipulate those upcoming elections, but it's the most concrete plan we've seen yet, because five new seats in Texas would put Democrats at a huge disadvantage in terms of being able to take back the House. It would give Texas Republicans nearly 80% of seats in a state where Trump only won 56% of the vote in 2024. And it's really unprecedented because this Texas map is already gerrymandered by Republicans. It already limits Democratic representation. It already limits representation for communities of color. And now that would be much worse. It would be even more skewed. And the fact that this is happening mid-decade is incredibly unusual. And the fact that it's being pushed by the president of the United States is even more unusual. So a lot of things are unprecedented right now, Amy, but I think it's pretty clear to say this is a really unprecedented power grab we're seeing in Texas.
So Texas Republicans have repeatedly asserted that they drew the current redistricting maps race blind. Your response, Ari?
Well, it's interesting because civil rights groups say the opposite. They say that the map discriminates against communities of color, the current map, because if you look at the last decade, 95% of the growth in Texas came from communities of color. But when it came time for Texas to draw new districts after the 2020 census, they drew new districts that had white majorities instead. So people of color are 60% of the state of Texas, but white people control 65% of the districts. And so there's already this imbalance. On the other hand, what the Justice Department has said is that four districts represented solely by Black or Hispanic Democrats were quote unquote unconstitutional racial gerrymanders. That was the theory they used to justify this special session in Texas. But that directly contradicts what Texas Republicans say, which is that these maps are race blind. So if anything, the maps give too little emphasis
on race. You have tuned
in
to Open
Mic.
Not too much. On CJSF
Radio. We're talking about major Trump critics, from Greg Kassar, head of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, to Jasmine Crockett, Representative Al Green, of course, all lawmakers of color.
Exactly. I mean, it's not hard to see what they're doing here. They're trying to pick up seats for Republicans by diluting the power of communities of color in Texas, by dismantling a district held by one Black Democrat, a district held by another Latino Democrat, districts that are supporting other Democrats from communities of color. So a third of Texans are moved around in these maps. But two-thirds of Texans of color are moved around in this map. So it's really a surgical dismantling of representation for communities of color. And it's happening, Amy, on the verge of the 60th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act, which takes place next week. And so they really are trying to weaken this historic voting rights law in order to pick up these seats that Trump wants in Texas.
So talk about what's happening today, the possibility that Texas Democrats could flee the state again. Explain what that means.
Well, there's going to be a hearing first in the legislature, but Republicans are going to try to move this very, very quickly. Remember, the stated purpose of this was supposed to be to look at the horrible flooding that happened in Texas. That's what Democrats are saying that the state should be focused on, how so many people died. Instead, they added redistricting, and that's completely overshadowed the horrific crisis that happened in Texas. But the idea is that if Texas Democrats leave the state, they will prevent Republicans from having a quorum to be able to pass the maps. They did that in 2003 when Texas did its first mid-decade redistricting under the auspices of then House Majority Leader Tom DeLay. They did it in 2021 to try to stop a voting rights bill. The problem is that it's very expensive for them to do this. Each member would be fined $500 a day. They couldn't pay it out of their campaign accounts. They'd have to go somewhere. And I would imagine not just the state of Texas, but the federal government would come after them. I'm sure Trump would be eager to weaponize the Justice Department, the FBI, and other law enforcement to go after these Texas Democrats. So they have a hard decision to make, but they don't have the numbers to stop the bill absent leaving the state.
What about the role of the Supreme Court?
Well, the Supreme Court laid the groundwork for this kind of egregious gerrymandering. They laid the groundwork for it by gutting the Voting Rights Act. States like Texas, which had a long history of discrimination, previously had to approve their voting changes with the federal government. They don't have to do that anymore, so that makes it easier to discriminate. And the Supreme Court also, in 2019, in a case called Rucho versus Common Cause, said that the federal courts couldn't stop partisan gerrymandering, that they not only couldn't block these kind of lawsuits, they couldn't even review them. That means that if states like Texas draw these really egregious maps and they say, we're just doing it for partisan purposes, that, yeah, Trump told us to do it. Yeah, that might look partisan, but that's fine because partisan gerrymandering is legal. That's because of what the Supreme Court has done. So the Supreme Court, John Roberts, the Chief Justice, and the other conservative justices, they have directly laid the groundwork for what's happening in Texas.
So I want to talk about what's happening in the rest of the country in response. California Governor Gavin Newsom responded to the new Texas redistricting map by saying that next year's midterm elections are being rigged and vowed to fight back with redistricting in California.
I think there's a growing recognition in this country, not just with Democrats, independents, but also Republicans, that de facto the Trump presidency ends in November of next year if the American people are given a fair chance and a voice and a choice. We will take back Congress. The President of the United States recognizes that, so he wants to rig the game, he wants to change the rules midterm. They're very effective at this. They've done this in the past. They've got a lot of experience doing this. They're doing a midterm rejection of objectivity and independence. An act that we could criticize from the sideline or an act that we can respond to in kind, fight fire with fire.
So that's California Governor Gavin Newsom. Now to New York Governor Kathy Hochul, who also weighed in on the redistricting plans.
All's fair in love and war, because we are following the rules. We do redistricting every 10 years, but there's other states that are violating the rules and are going to try and give themselves an advantage. All I'll say is I'm going to look at it closely with Akeem Jeffries.
So, again, that's New York Governor Kathy Hochul. Talk about the significance of these two states, both Democratic governors on either side of the country.
Well, blue states want to respond to Texas. It's going to be more complicated. Both New York and California have independent redistricting commissions. They have prohibitions on gerrymandering in their constitution. So it's not as easy as it would be in Texas to gerrymander. At least in California, they seem to be developing a plan to pass new maps and then have voters approve them in a special vote, basically, that would take place in November. That's the latest plan that I've seen. It's risky. It could get blocked by the courts. The voters could reject it if that happens. But I think that Californians and in New York and other blue states, they feel like they have a moral duty to respond, that if the maps get so rigged in the Republican direction, Democrats have no choice but to draw their own new districts. Now, what I worry about, Amy, is that we're going to be a race to the bottom here, that there's going to be retaliatory districting happening from red and blue states, and something that's very abnormal, which is the redrawing of districts mid-decade, will become normalized because of what Trump did. And the reason this is happening is because we don't have federal legislation banning partisan gerrymandering, and we have a Supreme Court that said that this kind of partisan gerrymandering is okay. And that has really led to a—
You have tuned in to Open Mic on TJSF Radio, broadcasting on 90.1 FM I'm worried from Burnaby Mountain, BC.
Ari Berman, we want to thank you so much for being with us, voting rights correspondent for Mother Jones Magazine. We'll link to your latest piece, Trump's Texas Gerrymander is Supercharging a New War on Democracy. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman.
Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting to you live from Burnaby Mountain.
Hey, do you want to make a real impact in the Black community? Join us where we connect you with Black-led organizations from all around the world. Get ready to get involved. Find the organization based on the location of interest. Follow us at supportblackcharities.org.
Indulge yourself in the cultural and folklore traditions of Italy on Il Sole Italiano every Sunday from 2 to 4 p.m.
Eravamo ancora fanciulli e ogni sera su